KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.
Good morning, I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Tuesday, June 24th. The San Diego City Council is overriding several of Mayor Todd Gloria's line item vetoes. More on that next, but first, the headlines. The U.S. bombing Iranian nuclear sites is creating more fear and uncertainty for Iranian-American San Diegans who have family in their home country. Bibi Kasray says she fled Iran with her family when she was 17 years old. She has called San Diego home since 1996. She has been trying to help family and even strangers find resources to leave Iran for the last few weeks.
I was like, who doesn't have a place to go? Who doesn't have a car? Who doesn't have fuel? And trying to match them. It was chaotic. Like, we have not slept a wink, whether we are inside or outside of Iran. It's been very tough.
Local congressional leaders are also reacting to the U.S. dropping bombs in Iran. Republican Daryl Issa praised the operation in a statement on X, calling it, quote, brilliant. Democrat Sarah Jacobs called it, quote, unconstitutional and an escalation of risks. Thousands of San Diego-based service members are currently in the Middle East. The aircraft carrier Carl Vinson and five other San Diego ships are among the U.S. military assets in the region, according to the USNI News. The Vinson and its strike group deployed in November. In March, the ship was ordered to the Middle East. Its deployment was extended last week. Other San Diego-based ships in the region include three guided missile destroyers and a guided missile cruiser. The County Board of Supervisors will deliberate and adopt its budget today. The county isn't facing the same kind of cuts as the City of San Diego. Its 2025-2026 fiscal year budget includes some staffing cuts, but it's an increase overall from last year. The county says it's monitoring Washington, D.C., as possible federal cuts could impact some county programs. Last month, the two Democrats on the board proposed tapping into the county's reserves as a safeguard, but that did not pass. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. The San Diego City Council voted today to restore some funding in the city's 2026 budget that Mayor Todd Gloria vetoed last week. Reporter Jake Gatta says this caps off a budgeting process that started back in December.
Earlier this month, Gloria received the City Council's approved budget for the next fiscal year, which added more than $30 million to his proposal. Last week, Gloria returned his line item vetoes to the council, cutting nearly $5 million that the mayor said would put the city at financial risk. At the council meeting, Gloria echoed these concerns.
Should this council choose to override my veto entirely, you are endorsing a level of risk that I cannot support and that I will not support. That budget will not carry my signature.
Still, Councilmember Henry Foster, the budget chair, introduced two motions to override the mayor's veto, one that would have restored all the funding, which failed, and a second to address council priorities like brush management and community projects. That one passed. And with that, the long budget process is over. Jake Gatta, KPBS News.
She marched for civil rights, women's rights, and for people who picked our fruits and vegetables. She even co-founded the renowned labor union United Farm Workers with Cesar Chavez. And at 95, Dolores Huerta remains active in public life, speaking at a Los Angeles ICE raids protest earlier this month. Huerta spoke with reporter Amita Sharma about today's political climate.
Dolores, you've been a community organizer, a labor organizer. You've lobbied and negotiated for people who held little power in our society. How would you describe the state of social justice in America today?
I would say it's lacking. We're seeing that everybody's rights are being trampled, and people are coming together now to try to fight back. But I would say that social justice is in the dark right now, in the closet. It's totally gone.
What concerns you the most about what's happening right now?
Well, it concerns me that so many people's rights are being taken away from them. I mean, I think I'm 95 years old, And I lived right after the Depression, World War II, the 60s and the 70s, the Vietnam War. And I have never seen anything as horrific as what we are seeing now in terms of the way people here in the United States are being treated.
As you just mentioned, your activism stretches back decades, and you scored big wins. You secured aid for dependent families and disability insurance for farm workers, to say nothing about obtaining their right to organize. Given those victories, did you ever anticipate a time in the United States such as what we're seeing now?
We were forewarned before the election about Project 2025. We were told what Project 2025 included. We have seen the manifestations of that right now. The billionaires wanted more authority and they wanted a dictatorship, and we're seeing that it's being played out. So it isn't that we were not warned. We were warned, but people didn't believe it.
Why do you think that people did not pay attention to the warnings about what might be coming down the pike?
Nobody thought that anyone would take these horrific actions against people here in the United States of America, be they citizens or residents. I mean, nobody thought that anyone would ever act that way. Of course, people of color who have always been met with a lot of oppressive behavior, they know because they have lived it. But a lot of the majority of the people here did not know. But now they have seen it and they are showing up to say, we do not like this. As they have said, we don't want a king. We want a democracy. But we know that we have to work very, very hard if we're going to save our democracy and even save our society at this point.
For people who are concerned about mass deportations, potential cuts to Medicaid and food stamps, the deployment of the military in response to protests, which have gotten violent at times, what is the path forward? How can they affect change?
Right now, what we have to do is just continue the protests. I think when you had 5 million people on the streets on No King's Day, that really shows that people understand that they have the power to speak up. And we see that people are fighting back. And this is what we need. We just need more and more people. And not to give up, not to get tired, because we're going to have to keep doing this as long as this dictatorship actions have been taking place.
What have you learned about the value of protests and just the overall fight for social justice over the decades that can be applied now?
Well, I am promoting very much that we go back to Gandhi, the peaceful nonviolence, the way that he was able to liberate India, Dr. Martin Luther King, the way he did to get the civil rights successful in the South, and of course, CESAR and the farm workers movement. You know, we were able to win by using nonviolence. And I know it's hard for people to understand that, but it has a power of its own. Not only should we practice nonviolence, we've got to make sure when we're on those protest marches that we check and see if anybody is using any kind of violence, that we stop them, because they will bring in perpetrators. They will bring in people to create violence just to justify the oppressive actions that they are taking.
And Dolores, do you think that the younger generation is prepared for a moment like this, is prepared to do what you just outlined?
Well, we have seen that the young people are stepping up and being very, very bold. They're not afraid to speak up and speak out. And they have all of these tools at their disposal that we didn't have back there in the 50s and the 60s. They have the social media platforms and they can mobilize very, very quickly. I have a lot of faith in the young people. And yes, they are coming out. And we just have to tell them that, remember, this is going to be a long fight. Don't give up. Just hang in there and keep organizing, organizing, organizing.
And Dolores, you turned 95 in April. What keeps you going? What keeps you politically active?
Knowing all of the work that we have to do, and we do know that our main job is to recruit more people to come into the movement, because we do know that the more of us that can participate, this is the way that we can make the changes that we need to make, and this is the way that we can win. So I like to say to people, like the poet Neruda said, you know, they can cut all the flowers, but they can't hold back the spring. They can cut all the flowers, but they can't hold back the spring. So we have to be the messengers and the gardeners, and we have to spread the seeds of truth and justice and activism out there. Si se puede.
That was labor activist Dolores Huerta with Amitha Sharma. On Monday, structural engineers at UC San Diego saw how a 10-story building made from cold-formed steel would react in a 6.9 magnitude earthquake. They simulated it on their outdoor shake table. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge was there.
The building sitting on the shake table was made from a recycled steel called cold form steel. And when the shake table started to move, the upper story swayed back and forth. The trained eyes of the engineers saw the building make a twisting motion they didn't see coming. The shake table mimicked the force of the Loma Prieta earthquake, which hit San Francisco in 1989. Structural engineering professor Tara Hutchinson said they will turn up that force in later tests to see how the building reacts to a quake that's 50% more powerful.
That would be a very rare earthquake, but we definitely want to generate the data to be able to understand the behavior of the building under that very rare event.
Researchers hope a successful test will allow construction of taller structures made from cold form steel. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
Transportation officials are considering relocating the train tracks in Del Mar away from the collapsing bluffs. But Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says rail advocates fear the project could lock in slower and more polluting trains to Los Angeles.
I take Coaster down here. I take Metrolink to visit my girlfriend in Orange County. I love taking it. Beats driving through traffic and having to deal with that, especially during peak hours.
Brian Legal lives in North County and is a big fan of riding the train. I meet him on a hiking trail that overlooks the single track along the Del Mar Bluffs.
I think it's just how convenient it is and the beautiful scenic views that are in SoCal's rail network, and just being able to hop on a train and see all my friends who live in San Diego or up there and get a good ocean view on the way.
Being a train rider in San Diego is not easy. These are the only tracks that connect San Diego to Los Angeles and the rest of California. They're often congested or totally closed due to landslides and emergency repairs.
Yeah, even in the past month, I've visited my girlfriend twice, and I had to take the Amtrak bus, the bus bridge, in order to get there, which is very inconvenient because Amtrak costs more and you have to hop on a bus, and it's always full. It sells out a week in advance. You can't just hop on.
Del Mar is one of the rail corridor's worst pinch points. So SANDAG, the county's transportation planning agency, is considering relocating the tracks, possibly into underground tunnels, which raises an important question. Will those tunnels be big enough for electric trains?
Electric trains are pretty much the most efficient way to move anything on land, and they're more energy efficient than other, you know, zero emissions alternative.
Adriana Rizzo is a member of the grassroots organization Californians for Electric Rail.
The biggest benefit is for passenger service. So electric trains accelerate faster, so you can have shorter, you know, faster trips. They can also go faster. So you can have these trains going up to 110, 125 miles an hour without any, you know, the specialized upgrades you need for true high-speed rail.
Currently, all the trains on this corridor are pulled by diesel locomotives, which are slower, noisier, and more polluting. SANDAG found electric trains would cut the travel time between Oceanside and San Diego to less than half an hour. That's faster than driving, even when there's no traffic. But electric trains would require a wider tunnel through Del Mar to accommodate the overhead wires that power the trains. And a wider tunnel would be more expensive.
Part of our shared use agreements in particular is to make sure that travel times are not increased.
Mary Dover is a spokesperson for the North County Transit District, which owns the train tracks and will have to maintain them, whether SANDAG reroutes them through Del Mar or keeps them in place. Dover says electrifying the trains would come with a big upfront cost to install the overhead wires. Some residents also don't like how those wires look.
And also from a maintenance perspective, making sure that we're at least aware of the costs that we will incur in the maintenance of the life cycle of this infrastructure.
Caltrans released its state rail plan in January. It aims for a transition to all zero-emission trains, but it leaves out the San Diego to Los Angeles corridor from its plans for electrification. Instead, it imagines trains powered by batteries or hydrogen fuel, technologies that are slower and less proven. Rizzo says even if there's no money to electrify the trains today, SANDAG should at least leave the door open to electric trains in the future.
They're not going to be building another one of these tunnels for the next 100 years. So if they make these tunnels too small to save a little bit of money, they are making a decision now about whether this corridor will ever be electrified. And it seems, you know, really foolish to make that long-term decision based on a small margin of what is already kind of an expensive project.
For Brian Legal, electric trains in San Diego would help bring back ridership that's been lost due to the constant delays and track closures. Caltrain in the Bay Area electrified their trains last year to resounding success.
Every quarter, they've seen more riders take it quarter after quarter, and I don't expect that to slow down anytime soon. And seeing that and wanting to bring that down and give that a shot, well, I think improve the lives of everyone. It will take traffic off the roads. It will improve the experience of everyone, not just people on the train, but everyone commuting downtown and back.
Sandag is currently scoping out what it will study in an environmental impact report. It's accepting comments on its preliminary study through June 30th. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
With peak fire season now underway, the threat to homes is an ever-present danger, especially in high fire danger zones. North County reporter Alexander Nguyen takes us to the Dixon Trail development in Escondido, which is certified as the first fire-resilient community in the nation.
When Kevin Walton moved into his newly built Dixon Trail home 3 months ago, he didn't know that he'd be among the first dozen or so families to live in a fire-hardened community.
We only learned that after the fact.
Walton called it a bonus.
For a brand new house, that's perfect because we would have wanted to add at least some of those elements like the indoor sprinkler system, but we didn't have to. It's built in, so total bonus.
In addition, the roofs are fire-rated. The vents and gutter screens are made from metal to prevent embers from catching the roof on fire. The eaves are stuccoed, the doors and fences are made of metal, and the windows are double-paned and heat-resistant. There's also a 5-foot perimeter around the home where no landscaping is allowed. That's the reason why the Nonprofit Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety declared the community fire-prepared. In a demonstration, homes not built to IBHS standards burned within 40 minutes. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
Even with the fire-resilient features, the homes are priced similarly to other new home developments in Escondido. That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great Tuesday.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Splitero, helping homeowners pay off debt by offering streamlined access to your home's equity with no additional monthly payments or new debt. Splitero provides a lump sum of payment in exchange for a share of your home's future value. Pre-qualification is available at splitero.com.